This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome to Drilling Deep. I'm your host, John Kingston. Good to be back. We had to miss a week there. I always hate that. But sometimes the guests just can't make it, and that's the way it goes. This week, as our guest, we've got Chirag Modri of supply chain software provider Blue Yonder. Blue Yonder just completed a survey of its clients, and he's going to talk about the results of it, as well as other issues and other trends he sees in the supply chain software space and the supply chain in general. Let's talk about oil. Something happened this week that had not happened at that magnitude since 2013. The Department of Energy's Energy Information Administration's weekly report on a huge amount of data added 239,000 barrels per day to its base refining capacity figure for the U.S. That number is published every week, but since refining capacity is not the kind of thing that changes frequently, the week-to-week number is usually zero. The change this past week, almost assuredly, is as a result of the growth in refining capacity at the Beaumont, Texas refinery of ExxonMobil. That addition was, the fact that the addition was online was announced several weeks ago, but whatever processes the EIA needed to add to the base took some time, and you see 239,000 barrels per day of new capacity in their weekly figure. As mentioned, that much has not been added in 1 week for 10 years. For diesel consumers, new refining capacity anywhere in the world is good news. You can make the sort of perfect economics 101 argument that a new barrel of capacity anywhere in the world is the same thing as a new barrel of capacity next door. But the reality is that next door barrel is going to have a lot fewer freight costs to get to the market. So for U.S. consumers, those new barrels coming on in Beaumont, Texas are a lot more valuable than new barrels of capacity that might come on in Brazil. Refining has been a great business for the people who own refineries for the past few years, in part because of a lack of new capacity coming online, even as some old capacity closed. You weren't going to get the kind of decline in consumption that we had as a result of the pandemic and not see an impact on the facilities that make those fuels. The problem is that new capacity, which is always being built somewhere in the world, was slowed by the pandemic. So you had closures, even as you had a slowdown in the construction of new capacity. We talked a few weeks ago about the giant new refinery in Nigeria, known as Dangote. It's more than 600,000 barrels per day, and just tell you, since you're not probably all refining experts, that big a new refinery is enormous. It's one of the world's largest. It has started operating in just the past few weeks, and now, of course, closer to home, you've got 250,000 barrels per day of nameplate capacity added in Beaumont, although the EIA lists that new capacity as 239, as mentioned. The difference isn't important. You can stick whatever number you want on it, but the reality is the capacity is there and it's working in the market. It's not the type of thing adding new capacity where you see any sort of immediate decline in prices as a result. But ultimately, more capacity puts downward pressure on the spread between crude and diesel or crude and gasoline. Let's remember that that spread for diesel, as measured in the futures market last year, got as high as $1.50 to $1.60. There may have been a couple of days when it was even higher than that. Now that number is less than 60 cents. That's not just some random number that deals only with traders. Ultimately, for buyers, the decline in that spread is absolutely one of the reasons why the retail price of diesel is down. As measured by the EIA weekly number that's used for most fuel surcharges, it's down now 18 out of 19 weeks. There are plenty of reasons, but new refining capacity certainly has helped, has played a very big role. That higher EIA number for capacity is just one side of it. Going to move on here now on Drilling Deep. You know, last year I attended the Gartner Supply Chain Symposium in Orlando. And I think I got about 4 podcasts out of it. There were just so many fascinating people who made presentations there that I went to them afterward and I said, would you like to join me on Drilling Deep? So I went to it this year again, same thing, where maybe we're not going to get 4 podcasts out of it, but it was just as fascinating as always. And I did have the opportunity to sit down with several executives from Blue Yonder while I was there. And I thought that the discussion with them was the type of thing that I would like to expand upon here on Drilling Deep. So I wanted to bring on a guest from Blue Yonder that I spoke with at Gartner. Actually, Chirag Modi was not at Gartner, but he's with us today. He is the Corporate Vice President of Industry Strategy at Blue Yonder. And first of all, Chirag, welcome to Drilling Deep.
Thank you very much, John. Thanks for having me.
And then the other thing is, you know, whenever I deal with companies that provide software to the software solutions to the supply chain, I know that I'm really terrible at describing what they do because every company does something a little bit different. Every company describes their product in a different way. Blue Yonder is a little different than most in that it's kind of a soup to nuts solution in that it does pretty much everything in the supply chain. You know, you find other companies that are a little more niche driven. So I'm going to let you talk about Blue Yonder and what it does.
Oh, thank you, John. So Blue Yonder, we are the category leader within supply chain solution space. And when you think about software solutions, which drive decisions for, you know, professionals within supply chain space, when you start talking about supply chain planning, you know, integrated demand and supply planning, you know, demand forecasting, whether it's manufacturing, whether it's retailer, we do help out every client within that space. Fast forward to, you know, after planning, you need to execute on those plans. And we help out with our solutions within that space as well. So that includes your warehouse management, transportation management, your order management, you know, reverse logistics, pretty much everything you can think of. You know, we are able to provide that help to our clients.
So are most of your clients shippers? Are they the kind of, let's say, big retailers or big manufacturers, OEMs, that then feed their product into the supply chain? Are those the biggest users of the Blue Yonder solution?
It's actually roughly one-third. And the third category, which I didn't describe earlier, is the third-party logistics firms. So a lot of these manufacturers and retailers, they outsource their operations. So even though they may keep some of the planning activities in-house, they use third-party logistics firms for executing on those plans. So roughly one-third of our business is within the manufacturing, one-third within, you know, within the retail, and then the rest in a 3PL space.
All right. And let's just point out that your ownership now is 100% by Japan's Panasonic, correct?
That is correct. Yeah, Panasonic bought us about 2 years ago, September of 2021.
Has that resulted in any changes in the company?
So certainly there's some leadership changes, as you would expect with any new owner coming in. But honestly, all of the changes have been tremendously positive. You know, for the bulk of our history, we were owned by, you know, different VC or private equity firms. And now we have an owner who is not looking at, you know, next 3 to 5 years, but looking at, you know, 10 to 20 year plans. And they have a history of making impact at a society level with wherever they invest money in, wherever they build products. So we are really, really excited about having Panasonic as part of our, you know, part of our Panasonic family, I guess.
So, Chirag, the main reason why your people reached out to me prior to Gartner was that you had just released a survey, the results of a survey of companies you deal with and their feelings on the supply chain and whether it was that much better, that much worse, or the same. And really, the kind of headline finding in that survey was that 80%, 87% of organizations had faced supply chain disruptions over the prior year, and it was 88% a year before. And, you know, the kind of basic narrative out there is that things in the supply chain had gotten a lot better and you had only a, you know, 100 basis point improvement in people who actually said that things were better. So what's going on out there that there was no improvement?
Yeah, it's funny how data shows up, right? They generally don't lie. And we have been working with clients throughout this time and even before pandemic for the matter. And we generally have a good pulse on, you know, what's happening in the marketplace. So I was going to quote you a small information from the book I read years ago called Goal by Eliyahu Goldratt, that any supply chain will have bottlenecks. And if bottlenecks stop in one area, it will pop up somewhere else. So most times when you heard the news or read it in Wall Street Journal or elsewhere, it was driven by the ships being waiting to be unloaded, etc. But now the issues are not that. Issues are elsewhere in the supply chain. And they could be as simple as I can't find enough suppliers to supply products to me for my retailers and manufacturing capacity. I can't find enough labor because the labor which I lost during pandemic, they haven't come back in the exact same amount of quantity they decided to not hold back. So all of those pieces kind of play into why you're continuing to see challenges from disruption perspective. What the data also doesn't show you, John, is the intensity of disruption. Meaning if the intensity was really, really high in terms of disruption last year, if it may or may not be as high of an intensity. And I can tell you this for sure, that it has definitely gotten better. We are just not out of the woods yet. And it's not as bad as, you know, last year when the ships were waiting to be unloaded. We don't have as bad of a challenge right now.
Yeah, you think about, I guess the way the question was posed is, have you experienced supply chain disruptions? I mean, given what you just said about bottlenecks, you fix some here, then they pop up there. I mean, you can imagine in the course of a year, almost everybody's going to have some supply chain disruptions. Nothing ever works 100% fully. And then you think about the disruptions, let's say from a year and a half ago, when they couldn't get chips and they literally had to shut down auto production lines. So even if those auto production lines maybe still dealt with some problems, they weren't shutting down. So things are certainly much better.
Yeah, and you also have to look at it from how humans behave, John. In terms of our disruption, our benchmark is in 2020 and 2021. And now that our benchmark is so low, if you will, when you start thinking about a little bit here and there, which may have happened last year, our view there is like, okay, you know what? It ain't as bad as what it was 3 years ago. And you know and that's really where I would quote this as is how humans respond to this. Some of these surveys kind of play a big role into how you decide what disruption is. And that's really kind of where we come from, is we work with these clients and we can decide based on what we are seeing with them. You know, how bad of a disruption are we talking about? How big of an intensity are we talking about here?
Yeah, how much do you think might be driven by by higher costs? Let's say somebody can get a part, can get a chip, whatever, then maybe they couldn't have gotten a year and a half ago, but they just don't like the price because it's a lot higher. So they say, yeah, we've got supply chain problems. Well, maybe you really don't have supply chain problems, but you've got a price problem.
Yeah, so cost definitely plays a big role. The other piece which plays a big role is the geopolitical tensions. The reliance on offshore, you know, China in particular, and a lot of companies wanting to diversify their supply base, that also adds into the disruption because they won't be able to find anybody right away, which is going to match the exact same quality, exact same timeline, exact everything right off the bat. So part of the disruption piece, which you saw in the survey, is also driven by some of those geopolitical tensions.
How much do you think the nearshoring phenomenon is just talk? And how much of it is real? And if it's real, how much do you think might end up kind of washing on the shores of disappointment that, you know, that for all the problems of having some of your supply chain needs supplied from abroad, to bring them back to North America in one shape or another is just too difficult?
It's real. It's very, very real. And we may have had some false starts in the past, but this time around, it's very real. So I'll give you a very small example. Prologis just released a report that the hottest markets in south of the border are in Tijuana and Juarez, and this is the commercial real estate, manufacturing, as well as distribution space. They can't find enough space there. There's just not enough land to even build more for what they need. This is no different than 1.3% vacancy rate, which was reported in the LA area, not too long ago, for the commercial real estate. This is real. This is not going anytime soon. And the other announcements, such as Toyota, and this announcement came out about a month or two ago, pretty big press about it, is they are basically looking at building two supply chains for their global supply chains. One which is independent of China and one which is dependent on China. And they are decoupling US and China supply chains, wanting to ensure that if something were to happen, they don't have any disruptions in their supply chain. It's pretty massive news.
Given the aging of the Chinese population, you can almost argue that the emphasis on China as a supplier was probably inevitable. It was probably going to happen one day or another. At least that's my view. How much did COVID speed that up?
I don't think it was COVID itself per se. I agree with your assessment, though. It was at some point it was going to happen. I think the non-COVID factors are playing a big role in it, John. It's the policies of the prior administration, the trade deficit imbalance, the political issues with regarding China Sea and more recently with now Cuba, for example, China setting up, spy stations in Cuba. I mean, all of those pieces kind of play a much, much bigger role, and not to even mention Taiwan for that matter. All of those roles, all of those issues actually played a much bigger role than COVID itself.
Okay. Let's go back to Gartner, even though you weren't there. And really, it was the AI meeting in a lot of ways. Between the meeting I went to the prior year and this one, the whole idea of ChatGPT had arisen. AI is not new to the supply chain, but, ChatGPT and, the potential is so enormous, and sometimes it's almost kind of scary, that it's almost like it changed the entire thread of the meeting in just 12 months. And that's all that anybody talked about. So let's start with your views. Looking at some of the things that you have written, or at least your company has produced, the survey results, I'm going to reading right here now. The survey results said AI can be helpful primarily in four areas: inventory and network optimization, warehouse resource management, supply chain risk management, and demand forecasting. So a lot of those capabilities already existed before ChatGPT. So how much have advances in AI advanced their use in those four things? And where does ChatGPT play a role? And we won't just call it ChatGPT. The more formal term is generative AI.
That's correct. Yeah. And so rightly said, John, those capabilities, some of those, if not all of them, already existed. So I was at Microsoft Tech Center a couple of days ago in Chicago, and, they kind of went through some of those details with me. Those capabilities have existed for almost 20 years now. So it's not relatively new, but the generative AI piece is the one which is causing a lot more news, if you will. And the piece is here to stay from automation perspective. Some of those pieces have been taken into account in the solutions which we build and have built and have been using. But some, there's a lot more opportunities. The code base aspect of it is where some of the opportunities exist. Then there are opportunities with respect to better forecasting engines, but not just better in the sense of doing a better forecast accuracy per se, but also responsiveness of it. Because even some of those pieces today, they're dependent on people utilizing certain factors within the system to change their forecast a little bit. Versus with the generative AI piece, it's learning in the background. And that learning process feeds information back to your system, which helps you speed things up. So the decisioning aspect is much, much, much quicker. There was a quote somewhere, and I don't know how accurate the quote is, but the quote was, every 1.5 years, our knowledge is going to double as a humankind because of the regenerative AI piece. And that is a massive, massive claim. 1.5 years. I mean, that's like 18 months. I mean, that's nothing.
I mean, do you see generative AI being used in the same way that we've seen demonstrations? I did go to one demonstration at the Gartner meeting. It was put on by somebody from IBM, really fascinating stuff, where somebody in the supply chain will just be able to literally use natural language and ask the system a question and get a response kind of written in English.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned this because one of the quotes Microsoft used a couple of days ago was, the hottest language in the world right now, software language, is English, for the exact same reasons you just mentioned, is because of the way you are able to chat, if you will, with ChatGPT or any in general, you know, generative AI, large language models, and the way it's able to respond back to you in the same language, whether it's supply chain language or whether it's any other language, any other, a plumber or electrician or travel agent, it's able to respond back in the same language as you understand it to be. That's massive.
Yeah. Does the Blue Yonder system at this point have generative AI capabilities?
We are testing those pieces as we speak. Certainly, I can't go into more details on that front, but that is coming, yes.
Okay. And is that the kind of thing you develop on your own, or are there providers out there that you kind of buy their product off the shelf? I won't say buy their product off the shelf, but where you contract with them, where they take their capabilities and build it into the Blue Yonder system, or is this all organic that you can do internally?
It's a combination of both. In terms of some of the capabilities, you definitely won't be able to build it yourself, and you'll have to leverage some others. And some which are very specific to certain use cases, which we are able to solve, where we have already identified some gaps, we'll be able to test it with some of those additional tools we have.
You know, the contrast to a Gartner was, you know, you had this incredibly forward-looking technology, cutting-edge system, and everybody's talking about it. And then, you know, you get into discussions with people, and they tell you that they're still battling the spreadsheets. You know, they're still trying to sell their product into companies that, you know, are involved in the supply chain one way or the other, that are still doing a lot of work on spreadsheets. This the lowly spreadsheet, you know, and the contrast between the lowly spreadsheet and generative AI was just fascinating. Are you finding that that's still a barrier for you?
Plenty of barriers, John. And that's not going to go away. Let's be realistic about it. Not every company on the planet is going to be able to replace what they do with generative AI. Could that happen? Will that happen? Eventually, it may. I'm not going to sit here and predict when it's going to happen because I don't know. But there's going to be plenty of companies where the payback, the financial implications are just not there in terms of the investment they need to make. I mean, we still run into companies where they manage their warehouses and their, you know, $30, $40, $50 million of transportation activities on spreadsheets. Excel is the most widely used tool. And a lot of companies have been running their supply chains in Excel and it works for them. Now, could there be any benefits in associating themselves, them with, companies like Blue Yonder or so? Of course, there's benefit there, but is the juice worth the squeeze? And that's the question those clients will need to answer.
Interesting. I'm going to ask you one last question because we're running out of time here. I keep hearing the word resilience. We want a resilient supply chain. And I'm starting to worry a little bit that word gets thrown around so casually that nobody could really define it. So I'm going to ask you to define it. What's a resilient supply chain?
A resilient supply chain is where you don't have to worry about defining it. It works by itself. It's learning by itself and it's able to fix by itself. And what I mean by itself is not automatic. The processes are put in place. The tools are put in place. The SLAs are put in place. The accountability is put in place. And, you know, when one partner doesn't, you know, meet those SLAs for you, whether it's a supplier or a 3PL or a transport company or whoever, you already have processes baked into, you know, the whole thing where you don't have to worry about it. And to me, I think how quickly you're able to bounce back is essentially the outcome of all of these processes you have put in place. And I think those plan A's and plan B's were put in place before. Plan C's and D's and E's were not. And I think that's really the reason why resiliency word has been thrown around quite a bit, is because not every company was geared towards having their supply base outside of China, for example, one small example. But now they now have Mexico in plans, or United States in plan, or let's say Vietnam or other countries in plan. That's really kind of where I would define resiliency as.
I guess you would also define it as you use Blue Yonder software, right? I'll give you that final opportunity, right?
Absolutely. I mean, listen, that's really where all of these pieces kind of come together, right? I mean, the digital infrastructure needs to meet the physical infrastructure to put in place. And that's where the benefits exist with clients.
Well, and also one final thing, good luck to Blue Yonder on the PGA Golf Tour. I know John Rahm wears your shirt, correct? Right on the breast.
That is correct. That is correct.
Very good. I wonder how many people, I mean, this is not an obscure player, and I wonder how many people who see that know what Blue Yonder is. But as long as you get a couple of companies that know who it is and it helps your branding, I'm sure that's worth the price.
It definitely does. At the time when he won the Masters, there was a lot of load on our website. Let's just say that.
That's good. Very good. So we want to thank Chirag Modi. He is Blue Yonder's Corporate Vice President of Industry Strategy for joining us today on Drilling Deep. Chirag, do come back again.
Thank you very much for having me here, John. Appreciate it.
You have been watching Drilling Deep. We are part of the FreightCast family of podcasts from FreightWaves. You can find us on all the leading podcast platforms. And of course, you can find us on FreightWaves TV at all sorts of wonderful times. I've been your host, John Kingston, and please join us again.